Welcome to this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick, and it is the 11th of May. We are recording live today, so you can listen to this show afterwards on www.heritageradionetwork.com in our archives. And I'll start today with the Week in Wine recap, and in breaking news, the Associated Press has reported that the largest distributor in the U.S., Southern Wine and Spirits, is seeking $2 billion in loans to refinance existing debt. Bank of America Corp. is arranging a $1 billion revolving credit line and $1 billion term loan set to mature in 5 years, a source said. Another giant in the liquor industry, Diageo, is in the news this week, reporting that their chief financial officer, Nick Rose, will stand down in October and be replaced by Deputy Finance Director Deirdre Mahalan. Mr. Rose has made the decision to leave Diageo after 18 years, an unexpected announcement, but indicative of an orderly transition in place. The London-based maker of Johnnie Walker Scotch, Guinness Stout, and Smirnoff Vodka last week reported a better-than-expected 12% rise in third-quarter sales. And in the crop report, this past Thursday, a hailstorm struck some of Montalcino's cherished Sangiovese vineyards raising fears of possible damage to this year's crop, reports WineSpectator.com. The storm of only 15 minutes was centered in the southeastern part of Brunello di Montalcino appellation. Filippo Fonti Baldessere, owner of Fonti Winery, said, quote, "Although the weather has been unpredictable for this time of year, we were completely taken by surprise. Hailstorms about the size of olives pelted some of the vineyards near the village center. Other nearby vineyards were completely unaffected, and several producers in the area reported that damage had been done, but it was too early to assess how badly the wines may have been harmed. Hopefully the damage done will not be so grave, considering it's a bit early in the season and the buds and leaves haven't yet properly developed." And we're going to be back after a short break with Ryan Ibsen, wine director of the retail store Passanella & Son down in the South Street Seaport. But before, just a quick thank you to our sponsor today, TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network in the promotion of sustainable lifestyles. Take a short break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick here today with my guest Ryan Ibsen from Passanella & Son. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Ryan today brought Passanella's Red Rosso 2008, which we are about to get into right now. So tell me about this wine you brought.
We wanted to bring something over from Italy, being that the store... as much as we have an international selection, we wanted to bring something over that really was very inherently Tuscan, as Marco Passanella, the owner of the store, that is where he's from. So we decided it would be nice as a retail operation, and not too many have been able to do it so far, to bring over our own wine and keep it at a price that people can enjoy every day. So what it is it's a Sangiovese. It's from Maremma in southern Tuscany. It's farmed organically by a German winemaker, funnily enough. It represents sort of what I like to say is a Sangiovese that is sort of soft and elegant and something that drinks well now. That varietal specifically is often, I think, misjudged by wines such as Chianti or the wines from Montalcino, as it's quite often placed in the marketplace very early and gives a false conception of what the varietal is really like when it's ready to drink.
It's delicious. Super approachable for an 08 as well.
That's what I like to say. Absolutely.
So we were speaking a bit before there, and we were talking about private labels and how there seems to be a growing trend, which I've reported earlier in the show as well in previous segments. So tell me a little bit about the process for you, and I know you were instrumental in sourcing this particular.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, as we said, I think we started with a lot of information about where we wanted the wine to be from, and sort of what we wanted to represent and what we thought would work well as a representation of what we do for a table wine that, you know, is inexpensive. And so we sort of knew where we wanted to cull it from, but we weren't exactly sure who we were going to find or, you know, where we would find the wine. So it actually took just going over there and really looking around and finding the right scenario. We happened to meet these winemakers at a place called La Selva and really liked what they were doing and found it really easy to work with them. And there's actually a white wine on the water, I believe, right now, a Vermentino, which should be here just in time for it to finally heat up for good.
Nice. Now, did you go to source that wine as well?
No, a couple problems with U.S. Customs. After those, we finally got some samples, and we did not get to go on a work-related journey this time. But we're quite confident in what's on the way to us.
Excellent. And tell me a little bit about Maremma. I have yet to visit that particular.
You know, the first thing, I had never been until we went to source this wine that far south, actually. What it instantly conjured to me was sort of those spaghetti Western movies with Clint Eastwood from years back. It's definitely a dusty place.
Yeah.
It's not at all like the north of Italy where I've spent the bulk of any time I've spent in that country. It's pretty arid, even though it's not too far away from the coast, but a beautiful, very rugged terrain. For sure.
So it's being dubbed as the Wild West of Italy.
I would
true.
Go that far. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So just to bring back to Passanelle and Son, when was the store open?
The store's been open just about 4 years, actually. We're down on South Street in the north part of what's termed the Seaport. The actual building itself was a part of the fish market until they moved to the Bronx about 5 years ago. Marco Passanella and his wife Rebecca Robertson Passanella, she and himself, they took this space that I imagine it must have been just an utter mess, and they transformed it into this absolutely beautiful store that's just a lovely place to spend your day. And it's certainly, I've always thought, a great forum for showcasing the kinds of wines that I really, you know, want to turn people on to.
Yeah, it is a really special place. And I'd say that they were pioneers in really the neighborhood there. It's turned into such a little hub of little food mecca and boutiques and things like that. And now you have the New Amsterdam Market.
Very excited about the New Amsterdam Market. It's just, as somebody that's passionate about wine and, you know, and in relation to that, passionate about pairing food and wine, it couldn't be cooler than to have, you know, thousands of people show up on any given day who are just, you know, that have that love themselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, I thought we would do, from a general perspective, not so focused on retail, but just kind of misconceptions of wine. We've had several listeners write in recently talking about just tasting and kind of more general terms as opposed to so specifics on certain things that we talk about here on the program. So your expertise, I'd love to hear from you on your thoughts on the four misconceptions of wine.
Sure. I think this always opens a chasm, and there's always a lot to talk about. But I think at the risk of generalizing about not generalizing, I think the first misconception I would ever point out is that you can never really know enough to expect anything. Whether you're a wine professional or somebody who's just really, you know, had a recently ignited passion for the subject, I think that there are so many variables to this world of wine. That, you know, there, you know, from vintage to varietal to not to mention the least of which the winemaker's style themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can never really 100% ascertain. I mean, I break that rule of generalization all the time because I try to help people find what they're looking for based on what they know from what experiences they've had. But I think once you sort of realize that, you know, your favorite thing can't last forever, or, you know, no two experiences that you think are going to be similar end up similar all the time, I think that that opens this whole world in which experimentation becomes just fantastic. And for me, the people that I know that are most passionate about wine are people that would be thrilled to keep tasting new things all the time.
Mm-hmm. And in the 2 years that you've served as wine director at Passe Nansen, have you noticed the customer base, the loyal and regular customers, be more experimental with their selections?
Absolutely. I think what's important in any sort of retail or, you know, in restaurants as well, is to be able to establish trust. I think that, yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you don't know somebody or know what direction they're coming from at first, you might be more likely to just take the safe bet, if you will. But as you know, I've seen people come back again and again, and I've got, yeah, absolutely, I've got people drinking things that a year ago I never would have expected them mm-hmm. to be interested in at mm-hmm. all. And it's really very rewarding.
Great. And what about number two?
I'd say I would hit it. Price in wine. I'd say that the more expensive the wine does not necessarily mean the more delicious mm-hmm. Or better that it is. I think that there's two ways that I think of constantly when I think of pricing in wine. I think supply and demand, which is probably the original reason that wine began to cost more. You know, if there's something little of something in the world, and people want it based on necessity of want, I think it's going to be expensive. And I understand that. I think, you know, that quite oftentimes makes something worth a splurge. But I also think that there's a lot of wine in this marketplace that is pricey based on marketing strata, based mm-hmm. on, as I was saying to you earlier, based on decisions being made in board meetings.
Right.
And I think as a store ourselves, I think we look to avoid largely those types of wines to begin with. But I think I'm just as happy with many wines that cost $10 to $15 as I am with, you know, the wines that are 30 on upwards into the stratosphere.
Totally great. Yeah, it's a very fair statement.
Thank you. I think, you know, and it also, I think it's one of those things, I'm sure there's various factors, but pricing is always one of those things that have kept people from really delving in too. And if you can, you know, provide wines like this wine, or, you know, other people's wines that are at a low price points that have a good amount of quality and show a sense of place and a sense of soul to them, I think you're going to get a lot more people interested.
Well, I'm sure our listeners will be happy to hear that from you as well, considering the times that we are in and people seeking less expensive wines under $20. And this one you said is $10.99, yeah?
It is. And I think well worth it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks.
You want to move on to number three?
Sure. I think, you know, one of the things we strive for as a shop is to provide, I'd say we know that about 90% or more of the wines that we sell on any given day are going to be taken home, and they're going to be opened, and they're going to be consumed within probably an hour of having been purchased.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of misconception about aging in wines from two directions. Again, I mean, I think that there's a lot of wine on the marketplace that people assume would be better left to age, which is not the case. And then there's a lot of wines on the market, to bring up something like Sangiovese, to bring up like a Chianti again, that are out in the marketplace by market necessity too young.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving sort of false representations of what the wine could really be. And in fact, from a personal level, to just hover on Chianti for some reason, I for the longest time, I actually didn't enjoy the wines. I thought that it was just a varietal thing. It was not a specific, entity that spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had one that was 15 years old that was absolutely transcendent and perfectly in place with the food on the table. And it changed everything. So I think a lot of people are, drinking wines too young. A lot of people are holding on to wines that don't need to be held on to at all. I think each thing probably, unfortunately, there's too much to look after, but I think each thing deserves its own sort of attention.
Mm-hmm. I was home not too long ago, and I went down to my dad's basement, which has a few wines which he doesn't know he has. One of them, which was a rosé, a Provençal rosé. Actually, I think which one you had in your store at some point, Commanderie.
To Bargemont?
To Bargemont, yeah.
Well, that actually, there's this notion that rosé, I mean, again, this generalization, that there's this notion that rosé should be fresh and young and vibrant at all times. But there are rosés that actually will age, especially some of the classic styles from Provence.
And Bendel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with the wines from Lopez de Heredia from Rioja.
Yeah, love them.
Their Rosado doesn't get released in the marketplace until it's brown and 12 years old.
True, yeah.
So it's...
This one in particular, I think he just didn't know he had, and it was probably from 2002, and it turned brown, and I'm like, Dad.
Probably not. Probably not. Cool.
And before we take a short break, we'll talk about number four.
Number four, I would say, let me see. I think there's a lot of talk about flaws in wine. I certainly come from a restaurant background, so I'm quite often pairing wines with food and making suggestions as to what you should drink based on. On that, but I've watched a lot of people talk about this concept of the wine being corked, which is certainly a problem, certainly exists. There's a chemical compound called TCA that rots corks, and actually that's one specific way to really ruin a bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more corked wine out there than people probably know. I think that I think it's as positive to hear negative feedback about wines that I sell as it is to hear positive feedback. I mean, to really learn what it is that someone doesn't like about something. I'd say as a misconception, though, there are too many wines currently being labeled as corked that are not in fact corked, but maybe just were the wrong wine for the wrong occasion,
mm-hmm.
or that have some other inherent flaw, volatile acidity,
right.
oxidation that doesn't suit the wine at all. Or that, but
it's a more general term that people might associate with just something that either they doesn't really
I think it's
vibe become, with their palate.
Absolutely, I think, and at the end of the day, I think everything is subjective. I think that the happiest occasions I have are when I actually give somebody something that they really like. I want everyone to be happy, but I think it has become sort of like the general word for something. That doesn't fit the scenario quite right, whether the wine is flawed or otherwise.
And on that note, we also were speaking a bit about the barnyard characteristic, which people pick up in wines and think that that's flawed. And in some cases, there is a forcing of Brettanomyces or Brett, which we call that, mm-hmm. some winemakers purposely put into the wines to create this kind of characteristic. But it's not necessarily a flaw in some of these inherent wines of the southwest of France, for instance, or Corbière, where you have this. That's what it is,
Absolutely not. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who are drinking specifically New World wines or more modernly made wines who, in a million years, never think that they're going to love that one day. But
yeah.
They usually, long ways down the road. All of a sudden, smelling, rocks and dirt in the glass is more of a turn on than a turn off.
Sure, yeah. say that that's a trend as well.
It is, yeah. And it can go too far too. I mean, there are certain there are certain wines in the marketplace now that I think just because it's all encompassingly showcasing a terroir does not necessarily make it a thing of beauty.
And on that, we're going to talk after the break about some esoteric grape varietals and some featured wines that Ryan has picked in the store from up-and-coming regions. You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network and At the Root of It. Thank you to our sponsor, TechServe, and to our engineer today, Nat Wiener, and producer, Jack Inslee, and to my guest, Ryan Ibsen. So thank you again for coming.
Well, thanks
and,
for having me.
We're going to talk a bit about some featured wines from Passanella and Son Wine Shop that Ryan is particularly hyped on at the moment from some more obscure varietals.
Sure. I've always had a lot of sort of geographical ties to where I like to explore. I tend to associate having loved wines from one place and then sort of moving on in a direction away from that place, but somewhere sort of close by, somewhere that maybe people aren't quite as well aware of. I think we're currently excited, as I know a lot of people are, about the outstanding quality of wines from, say, the Jura region in France, northeast of Burgundy. They've had amazing success with wines from the more known Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, Burgundian varietals, to their native Sauvignon, Pulsard. Amazing wines, just elementally perfect for the foods that you'd want to pair with them. I think we're often very excited about parts of northern Italy that are really beginning to shine. Val d'Aosta, up near the Swiss border, where the wines are made from Fumine, which is a light-bodied red that's just the pinnacle of elegance, to Nebbiolo, grown up there, actually, a very known grape, but made in a much different style by some of the cooperative wineries up there. I've been doing what I do long enough now that I would be lying if I didn't say that I quite often am drawn to varietals that a lot of people may never have heard of before. It's not that you can't have amazing amounts of experiences with a Pinot Noir from here and there and all over the world, but it's really fun, and that's where I derive, the constant amount of satisfaction from, is really just moving forth into trying new things. Quite often, they're not rewarding, but, it's always fun to discover something new and to, to keep learning.
Yeah, and I think from a retail or a restaurant perspective, as you mentioned, it goes back to that trust factor and having someone come in looking for a Pinot Grigio or a Sauvignon Blanc, and you kind of reading into their likes and what their, level of
absolutely
adventure is, and then recommending something that might be fitting but different and new.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everything seems to be in twos today for me, but there's two ways that you can do that, too. If you've fallen in love with a certain varietal, like, say, Sauvignon Blanc, a lot of people, consider Sancerre, for instance, the best that Sauvignon Blanc can be. But there's an enormous amount of outlying areas, Ruy, Cancy, where they grow, you know, very similar Sauvignon Blancs that are maybe about, you know, half the price because mm-hmm. nobody's aware of them because there isn't that market need for
them. Yeah.
So there's wines that are pretty much what you would expect to know, but from different areas. Always worth checking out as long as the person you're buying from believes in them and you believe in them. And then, you know, there's also, you know, if you do find somebody that you can trust, you might mention that you love Pinot Noir and ask him, what other varietals do you think that I might benefit from trying?
One I remember pretty cool was someone who came in to the restaurant, wanted to try a Pinot Noir and kind of sold them on the Nerello Mascalese Etno Rosso from Sicily, which was just like,
beautiful.
Never heard of this. Okay, we're going to take a chance. But, you know, it completely hit the mark. So it's cool to gain those experiences. Which actually leads me to another question, being that you are in the retail sector and this controversial subject regarding whether or not wine will be available in supermarkets, which Governor Patterson is trying to rally for. What is your feeling on that, considering so much of what you do is so bespoke?
I think what I would say to that, without sounding, you know, too overconfident, is I say bring it on. You know, it's what we were talking about earlier in regards to, you know, really finding somebody that you can sort of trust and who you might be, you know, passionate about guiding your passion or, you know, turning you on to new things. I find it very difficult to believe that in a grocery store mentality that you're going to be able mm-hmm. to support that very well. And I think in the long run, I think a lot of this, you know, upcoming wine generation are interested in the source of things. They're interested in learning about what they're buying. They're interested in really getting into the heart of it. And I find it, you know, not, for me personally, I find it not to be that daunting of a task mm-hmm. to continue doing what we were already doing. I mean, it's proven that people are interested in it. And I'm not saying that a grocery store couldn't sell wine well, and sell lots of it. And I'm not saying that it isn't going to have an effect on the marketplace, because it certainly will. But I think you need to just rise up to, having great standards for what you do.
Mm-hmm. I feel like also another way that New Yorkers shop is you go, there isn't all the time this one central place you go to for everything. I mean, maybe Whole Foods has kind of changed that to a certain degree in some areas of town. But I know when I shop, I go one place for my cheese, I go one place for, you know, my produce, and maybe it's a little bit more work. But essentially, if you want to get the best, which I feel like more and more people are interested in doing and supporting, people are doing more, you know, mom and pop things. It's certainly worthwhile and a testimony to what you're saying.
I think it's with any amount of passion, I mean, it's more fun to, you know, to seek things out on that level.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's nice to see such a plethora of new businesses that are so focused on one good thing, or two good things even,
sure.
But not
yeah.
20
yeah.
Not supported things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And besides this Vermentino that you have coming on the boat soon, what other new projects are in the store for 2010?
One thing I think we're really excited about is we have an upcoming wine and cheese series, which is now in conjunction with our friends at Brooklyn Larder, who, I don't know if everyone's been out there yet, but it's a fantastic store. They're really sourcing some hard-to-find cheeses
yeah.
and foods from around the world, and it's very impressive outfit. So Sergio, our friend from over there, is going to come by. We've got three upcoming wine and cheese events. Next one will be about Switzerland, which I believe is
oh,
on the
cool.
26th of this month. And then we're going to hit Bavaria, I think, on the 6th of next month, and Castile León in Spain
Fun.
On the 26th. So yeah, all over the board. We have an oysters and wine event coming up at the end of this month, which the information about is online. I think I don't remember the date at the moment.
Okay.
But check out our website. There's all kinds of new events on the rise.
Which is what? What's your website?
Oh, I'm sorry. At PassanellaAndSun.com, spelled out.
Great. Well, thank you. We are just wrapping up today. And thanks so much for your time. It was great to hear some of your thoughts and talk about a retail perspective in the city as well.
Well, thanks, Erin.
Okay. And thank you again to our sponsor, TechServe, and to Jack Inslee and Matt Wiener, our producer and engineer. And thank you for joining us. See you next week.